Hello and welcome to Pets Plus Us, a weekly program of information and stories about the companions in our lives, our pets. I'm Mary DeFranco, your host for Pets Plus Us. Coming up this half hour, feeding your lizard, and we'll learn about canine hypothyroidism, wolf dogs, and our Don't Eat That segment, Pepto-Bismol. For our amphibian pet lovers, what do lizards eat? And this is written by Lori Hess, DVM. Lizards of all kinds are very popular pets, and given the variety of lizard species available today, it can be confusing to know what to feed them. Some lizards are carnivores. They eat only animal products. Some are herbivores. They eat only vegetable and fruit. And some are omnivores. They eat both meat and vegetables plus fruit. It is impossible to generalize what lizards eat, as different lizard species require different diets to be healthy. We know that all lizards need fresh water daily, and most also need supplemental nutrients such as calcium and vitamin D3, plus a multivitamin, the frequency of which depends on their species, age, and breeding status. Typically, supplemental vitamins and minerals are provided as a powder, dusted in small amounts on insects or produce, depending on the lizard's diet. For most commonly kept captive lizards, calcium, without added vitamin D3, should be sprinkled on food every other day, alternating with calcium-containing vitamin D3 on the days in between. In addition, a multivitamin should be offered on food once a week. Finally, regardless of species, lizards should never be fed fireflies, also called lightning bugs, as these insects are toxic and typically kill all lizards that ingest them. Perhaps the most commonly kept lizards today include bearded dragons, leopard geckos, and chameleons. We're going to learn more about feeding requirements for these species right now. What do bearded dragons eat? Bearded dragons are omnivores that should be fed a mixture of fresh rather than less nutritious frozen or canned produce plus live insects daily. They can have vegetables such as leafy greens, squash, carrots, peppers, broccoli, string beans, sweet potatoes, celery, cucumbers, and the list goes on, along with nectarines, watermelons, grapes, papaya, pineapple, and berries. Onions and garlic should be avoided. Insects they can be fed include mealworms, crickets, dubia roaches, butterworms, hornworms, phoenix worms, earthworms, silkworms, superworms, and wax worms, which should be fed sparingly as they are fatty. All of these worms are available from pet stores. Insects found outside or in homes should not be fed, as they may contain pesticides or other chemicals unhealthy for lizards. In general, younger growing bearded dragons need more insects and a little less produce, while adult dragons eat more produce than insects. Just as fresh produce is more nutritious than frozen or canned, live insects are more nutritious than dead ones. Plus, the movement of the insect stimulates the lizard's instinctual hunting behavior. All insects should be gut-loaded or fed with fortified food so that they are nutritious for the lizard, and the lizard should be offered only enough insects that it will eat so that leftover insects trapped in the lizard's enclosure don't start chewing on the lizard. What do leopard geckos eat? Leopard geckos are carnivores, eating only insects and no vegetables. Young geckos eat daily, while some large adults may only need to eat every other day, depending on their overall health and breeding activity. Most geckos eat predominantly mealworms and crickets, but depending on their size, they can also be fed a variety of the other worms listed above. Just as for bearded dragons, insects should be gut-loaded and only offered in numbers that the lizard will consume so that they don't get trapped in the lizard's tank and gnaw on the animal. Insects should be moistened and dusted with vitamins and minerals as described above. Be careful not to overfeed the gecko, as they tend to overeat and get fat. Healthy geckos will store fat in their tails, which should be plump but not wider than their bodies. Not thin and pencil-like. However, overweight geckos will develop a stomach paunch and often have fat deposited along their legs and arms as well. Ideally, geckos should not be fed more insects than they will eat in a 20-minute period. Be sure, too, not to feed insects too large for the gecko, or they will not be able to eat them. The general rule is not to feed insects longer than the space between the lizard's eyes. What do chameleons eat? Chameleons are more difficult to feed and, in general, to keep overall than other lizards. However, their popularity has increased in recent years. Most chameleons are carnivores, eating a variety of insects, including the list above that we just mentioned, plus wingless fruit flies. However, veiled chameleons will also eat vegetables such as mustard, dandelion, and collard greens. Juvenile chameleons should be fed every day, while adults can be fed every day to every other day, depending on their body weight, breeding status, and overall health. Insects should be offered one or two at a time, until the chameleon no longer wants to eat. Insects should be dusted with mineral and vitamin supplements, as described above. Chameleons will thrust out their very, up to several inches long, tongues to catch and eat insects one at a time. Another unique feature of chameleons is they will not drink standing water, but drink it dripping off of plants in their enclosures. Automated misters are commercially available to provide dripping water to chameleons so that they stay hydrated. Regardless of species, reptiles must be kept within their preferred optimal temperature zones, which vary by species, in order to digest food properly. Lizards and reptiles in general are ectotherms that depend on outside heat sources to maintain their body temperatures for optimal digestion and immune system function. Therefore, to keep your lizard healthy, it's critical to understand not only its optimal diet, but also its optimal temperature range so that it can process the nutritious food you offer. If you provide the ideal diet, light, heat, and humidity, you can help your pet thrive and potentially live a long, happy life. For a complete list of all the vegetables and fruits that your lizards can eat, and more about lizards, you can visit PetMD's website at petmd.com. And now we're going to learn about canine hypothyroidism from an article published in the September 2016 edition of What Doctors Don't Tell You magazine. Canine hypothyroidism, what is it? Hypothyroidism refers to an underactive thyroid gland that produces less thyroid hormone than it should. It's the most common endocrine disorder in dogs. In cats, the opposite problem, an overactive thyroid gland or hyperthyroidism, is more common. The thyroid produces two kinds of hormone, triiodoxuronine, or T3, the active form of the hormone, and thyroxine, or T4, the inactive form that circulates in the bloodstream. T4 is converted into T3 after being absorbed into cells or by the thyroid gland. Thyroid hormones affect virtually every cell in the body as they are the body's basal metabolic hormones. Too much thyroid hormone increases the basal metabolic rate, while too little decreases it. What causes canine hypothyroidism? Nearly 90% of cases result from autoimmune thyroiditis, where the body's immune system progressively attacks the thyroid gland. Other causes include thyroid gland atrophy or wasting away, or rarely a thyroid tumor. Generally, middle-aged, medium to large breeds of dogs are affected, especially golden retrievers, Doberman pinschers, boxers, and Irish setters. What are the signs? The classic signs of hypothyroidism tend to appear when more than 70% of the thyroid gland is damaged. These include non-itchy hair loss or thinning of the fur, a dull hair coat, excess shedding and scaling, weight gain, reduced activity, reduced ability to tolerate cold, and recurrent ear and skin infections. In rare cases, the esophagus may become dilated. This is called megaesophagus, causing regurgitation, and there may be abnormal neural and muscle function, leading to muscle weakness and difficulty walking. How is it diagnosed? Diagnosis can be tricky because thyroid dysfunction produces a wide range of clinical signs, many of which are subtle and resemble those of other diseases. Still, there are several blood tests that can confirm a suspected diagnosis. Usually, a panel of tests is done to increase the chances of an accurate positive diagnosis. And what's the conventional treatment? The standard treatment is a synthetic version of T4 called T-thyroxine, marketed as Siloxine. The tablets have to be given once daily for life, but they're not suitable if the dog also has adrenal insufficiency. T4 is generally converted to T3 in the body, but a few dogs cannot make this conversion and so require T3 medication. And that is all about canine hypothyroidism. And now for the portion of the program I like to call Don't Eat That. Can you give a dog Pepto-Bismol? This was written by Caitlin Altimo. It's hard to watch your dog feel uncomfortable, especially if what ails him is as common and simple as an upset stomach. If your dog has diarrhea, he may not be acting like himself, and you may want to help him feel better by reaching for the same thing that comforts you when your stomach hurts. The famously pink over-the-counter medication Pepto-Bismol, or bismuth subsalicylate, is used to treat gastrointestinal upset in humans. And although it may aid in the resolution of diarrhea in dogs in certain situations, it should only be used if directed by a veterinarian and at the appropriate dose, said Dr. Jessica Wallach, a staff doctor at NYC's Animal Medical Center, adding that it should not be administered long-term. While Pepto-Bismol can work wonders on your stomach, it could cause more harm than good when it comes to your dog's overall health. What are potential side effects of giving your dog Pepto-Bismol? There are some concerns and potential risks involved when it comes to giving a dog a dose of Pepto-Bismol, and that is why it is best to leave the ultimate decision up to your veterinarian. Pepto-Bismol can cause dogs' stools to turn a greenish-black color, and as a result, it can be difficult to discern if your dog is experiencing melena, or blood in the stool, which presents as black, tarry stools and can be indicative of a serious medical issue, Wallach said. Additionally, Wallach said that the active ingredient in Pepto-Bismol contains aspirin, so if used too frequently or at high dosages, it can result in stomach ulcers in dogs. The risk of ulceration is increased if used concurrently with certain medications, so always talk to your veterinarian prior to administration, especially if your dog is on medications or has any health conditions. Pepto-Bismol tablets can also appear radio-opaque on x-rays, Wallach said. This means that if your dog's gastrointestinal signs become worse and abdominal radiographs are performed by your veterinarian, the tablets can be mistaken for a metallic foreign body. This could lead to unnecessary surgery or other medical procedures, putting your dog's health at greater risk than it needs to be. What are alternative solutions for stomach pain relief? If your dog has an upset stomach, there are ways to comfort him until the diarrhea passes. Mild, sudden-onset diarrhea in dogs is often self-limiting, and medications are not needed for resolution, Wallach said. That being said, you can feed your dog a bland diet, like plain boiled chicken or white rice, for a few days if he has soft stool or diarrhea. Knowing that you are nearby can also help soothe your dog, so try to fit in a few tummy rubs while he rests. If your pet's symptoms do not resolve, or if they worsen, or if other signs of illness develop like vomiting, lethargy, or inappetence, however, you should bring your dog to the veterinarian, Wallach said. Although Pepto-Bismol may help address your dog's mild diarrhea, never administer a dose without consulting your vet first. And if you're curious if the same rule applies to your cat, know that Pepto-Bismol should never be given to cats under any circumstances due to the risk of salicylate, aspirin or aspirin derivatives toxicity. Wallach said, salicylate toxicity can cause anemia, ulceration, and liver failure in cats, making salicylates toxic for your cat at any dose. Here's a story that I think is appropriate for the autumn months from the Dodo. Puppy given away for free wasn't what he seemed, by Elizabeth Claire Alberts. Free puppy, the sign said on the house in Tucson, Arizona. A young man noticed the sign and knocked on the door. When he saw the puppy's big amber eyes and alert ears, he fell in love. He knew the puppy was coming home with him. But the puppy, named Neo, turned out to be a handful. Neo was very nervous and skittish, and he'd pee and poop all over his new owner's car. Whenever he was driven somewhere, he also wanted his owner's company, and only his owner's company, all the time. While the owner was very happy to give Neo attention, he was also a full-time student and worked a full-time job, so Neo was often left alone in the backyard. According to his owner, Neo would dig out or jump the fence to play with the neighbor's dogs, Kate Solansky of Wolf Connection told the Dodo. He built a higher fence to help contain him, but Neo chewed through it and continued to escape. What the owner didn't realize was that Neo wasn't exactly a dog. He was what you'd consider a high-content wolf dog. Neo had the physical markings of a wolf, amber eyes, coarse coat, and a long, lanky body, but also he displayed behavioral characteristics of a wolf. Escaping to interact with the neighbor's dogs wasn't just a playful puppy trait. It came down to Neo's urge to find his pack. The neighbors were initially gracious about Neo's surprise visits. They'd take him into their house, but Neo wasn't interested in interacting with people besides his owner. He'd avoid eye contact and cower in their bathroom. Neo also wasn't interested in the treats the neighbors offered him, which most dogs are crazy about. After Neo appeared in the neighbor's yard for the umpteenth time, they'd had enough. They drove Neo to a shelter at the Humane Society of Southern Arizona to see if they'd hold on to him until a solution could be worked out with the owner. Maureen O'Neill, the former CEO of the Humane Society of Southern Arizona, remembers Neo's arrival. One morning before our animal welfare campus opened to the public, I was outside with another staff member, O'Neill told the Dodo. I saw a couple walking a long-legged canine to the front door. It wasn't his body composition that made me notice, but his behavior. Neo was completely avoidant of human interaction. The couple walking with him seemed, as best I can describe it, perplexed. O'Neill soon realized this wasn't going to be a typical drop-off. I approached the couple and asked, "You know, that isn't a dog, right?" O'Neill said. They responded, "We were wondering." O'Neill quickly researched the laws in Arizona regarding wolf dog ownership. Unless you're a Native American or you have a special permit, you can't own a wolf dog in the state. If the shelter accepted Neo, they might be under legal obligation to report him to the authorities. O'Neill got in touch with Wolf Connection, a wolf dog rescue center and sanctuary in California, and asked if they'd take Neo. They said they would. Then O'Neill got in touch with the original owner and asked what he'd like to do. Ultimately, he agreed that Neo should go to the sanctuary. I told him I was proud of his decision, O'Neill said. His boy had a wonderful life ahead of him at Wolf Connection. Neil was in excellent physical condition when he arrived at the sanctuary, but the staff initially kept him isolated until the vet could give him medical clearance. At least they tried to keep Neo isolated. Neo decided that he didn't like being kept so far away from the rest of the pack, off in the isolated area of the compound, Selinsky said. So he escaped the isolation kennel and went straight to the habitat of Wolf Connection's alpha female, Maya. On the first night, Neo also joined the nightly howl that occurs as the pack care team gets ready to leave the sanctuary each day. He didn't wait to see where he fit in with the pack, O'Neill said. He knew he belonged. Neo had finally found his pack. In many states, it's either illegal to keep a wolf dog or there are strict regulations. So make sure you don't accidentally get a wolf dog, as Neo's owner did. If you're not sure if a dog is a wolf dog, look for physical traits like fur covering the inside of the ears and entire belly area, black claws, and diamond-shaped scent glands on the tail. That said, wolf dogs don't need to look exactly like a wolf to be considered a wolf dog. Their wolf-like traits might be more behavioral. Like Neo, they might avoid new people and have excellent escape skills. For those who purposely seek out a wolf dog, Julia Capelli, the lead of programs at Wolf Connection, has this to say. My advice would be check your ego. Why do you want to have an animal that probably doesn't belong in a home? The reason why more than 70% of all wolf dogs in the U.S. are euthanized on a yearly basis is because of the ego of people who want to own a wolf. No matter how good their intentions are, it doesn't end well in most cases. Wolf Connection has rescued over 50 wolf dogs of varying content over the past 7 years and has given them sanctuary, love, and an extremely enriching quality of life. You can learn more about wolf dogs and Wolf Connection's continuing rescue efforts and care of their rescued pack by visiting their website at wolfconnection.org. Did I ever tell you about my cat, Brownie? She was a feisty kitten when I first adopted her. She figured out pretty quickly that the surest way to get my attention was to knock something over. After a while, I had nothing open on my open shelves, and none of my houseplants survived their inevitable falls to the floor. Now, PetMD explains, why do cats knock things over? At times, our cats can be funny and weird companions. They like to sleep on our heads, play with boxes, and bring home that dead mouse they recently killed. Some like to sprint and jump off the couches and counters and rest in nooks behind toilets and on top of cabinets. Another strange-to-us behavior that felines seem to favor? Knocking things over. And while the habit can be funny sometimes, other times it leaves us with a shattered glass vase or insert your latest broken item here, like houseplants, and a mess to clean up. Why do cats knock things over? Some of our cats' strange habits can be easily explained, but this is one habit that leaves us scratching our heads. So while trying to better understand your cat and prevent a future mess, you may wonder, why do cats knock things over? It depends, says Amy Sojay, CABC, Certified Animal Behavior Consultant, with the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants, and the author of several books about cat antics. There could be multiple reasons why cats knock things over. Could cats knocking things off tables and shelves have something to do with your cat's prey drive? Probably, says Eddie Havav, Senior Feline Behavior Counselor at the ASPCA Adoption Center. Cats are hardwired to hunt for their food, so knocking things over may be a manifestation of this instinct. Further, Sojay explains, cats use their paws to test and explore objects, and the movement, sound, and touch or feel of the object helps them understand what might be safe or not. Your cat's paw pads are very sensitive, so when they pat, swat, and knock something down, it helps them better explore the objects around them. How you react after something is knocked down can also influence whether or not the behavior continues. Humans make great audiences, explains Havav. Who doesn't jump up when that glass starts to go over the edge of the table? When cats want attention, they learn very quickly what gets your eyes on them. Cats are incredibly adept at finding ways to manipulate what they want, says Sojay, which often comes down to look at me, feed me, play with me. She explains that since even bad attention is better than being ignored, knocking over objects provides another way for cats to get a reaction out of their owners. So, as hard as it may be, if your cat is in the habit of knocking things over to get your attention, the best thing to do is to ignore the behavior and put away any breakable valuables. Another explanation? Your cat may knock things over simply because it's fun. A moving paw padded object combines all of the best aspects of stalking and prey chase with the movement and tactile feel of the padded object and the final escape rush of the falling item, explains Sojay. To prevent accidents, make sure your cat has plenty of appropriate toys around and rotate them in and out of service to keep them exciting and new, because cats get bored very easily. And schedule play and exercise time with your cat every day. The combination of boredom and pent-up energy will always send cats searching for trouble. Knocking objects over or off shelves and tables may be a way for your cat to express his prey drive, explore his surroundings, and get your attention. But cat behaviors agree that there could be other undiscovered reasons behind this common cat behavior. The research just hasn't been done yet, shares Havav. Basically, because cats aren't as willing as a lot of other animals to allow themselves to be studied. That will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. I hope you enjoyed the program. Please don't forget to spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment. Pets Plus Us is a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. If you'd like more information about this program or to hear this program again, visit our website at wxxi.org/reachout. I'd also like to invite you to share your pet story with us by writing to us at reachout@wxxi.org.